Good evening, church. I had a couple people ask me what this sermon was all about. I told Kurt, I said, I'm preaching about you. I've titled it The Mighty Member. I told him I documented everything he's done for the last 6 years, and I'm going to talk about him. There'd be a lot to talk about, wouldn't there? We're going to talk about the tongue tonight. And we're going to be in James chapter 3. We got into a pretty deep study in this in my class probably about a month or so ago. And I've done a couple sermons on this, but some things came out that I thought maybe needed to be more thoroughly expounded upon. And we know that James uses several different examples of what the tongue is like and what it does. But before we get into that, I want to give you a couple of ideas that are going on today that maybe we can relate to also. I think probably all of us have watched some kind of television show with firemen, or maybe we've been around fires, and we see a hose dropped. That fire hose, when it becomes uncontrolled, or when it's controlled, does a whole lot of good. We hang on to it, spray the water out, puts the fire out. But if you leave it unattended, it just flaps and does everything on the ground. And there's a mighty force of water that comes through those hoses. That same hose that can do a whole lot of good can also destroy. And if left unattended, it could also kill. And I say that because it takes a strong mind to control the unruly tongue. Holding the tongue is difficult. Yet as we see in James, hold it, we must. The tongue can become a source of quarreling, of discord. Anger causes us to erupt with evil. The tongue can spread gossip. It can be deceptive. It can be very cruel at times. And deadly. I'm speaking deadly here of a spiritual death. False teachers can lead you into a spiritual death. Wrong words said to someone that's sensitive can lead to their spiritual death. The tongue can speak lies. It's deceitful, lying, flattering tongue. It will kill. Again, back to a spiritual kill. It can rob people of their lives. It can rob you of your own salvation. It can also hide. The liar, as we know, can't be trusted. And we also need to be careful on social media. And this is one of the things that came up in the class. I don't think sometimes that we stop and think about what we're doing on social media. When we hit a button on there to share to someone else something, that's us saying it. That's the same thing as if we were standing person to person with the audience we've got out there and saying the same thing. And we need to be careful of that. Because what we post and what we share, in essence, comes from our tongue. Let's stop and think about that for a minute. It's just the same as if we said it verbally. Now, I see a lot of stuff on, I'm not on all social media, just Facebook, but I see a lot of stuff on there that I'm thinking, if this person were here, would they really say that? You know, it's easy to hit a share button. Boom, it's out, gone. You don't think any more about it. Or you type in something because you're mad at somebody. That's real easy to do, but would it be that easy if we were standing person to person with someone? We have to be very careful sometimes what we get into in our social lives and how the tongue acts and reacts with what we're doing. I'm going to put this in here now. I'm also going to end with it. Because I want you to understand the problem really is not with the tongue, but it's with the heart. The heart must be cleansed before you're ever going to get into a position to control the tongue. And the heart is going to be evil until we get God in it. And until he's in it 100%. That's where the problem with the tongue comes in. Because what's in the heart comes out of the mouth. We go to James chapter 3. And we'll start in verses 1 and 2. James starts this chapter. He says, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things." Then he says, "If anyone doesn't stumble in word, he is the perfect man, and also to bridle the whole body." I think it's important here to understand and know, and I think we do, that we all stumble. Paul tells us we all sin, we all fall short. But what James is talking about here, and we need to also understand, you know, this book letter was written, most people think somewhere in the late 40s, early 50s. Some will even stretch it out to 60, but most people think it's around 40, the late 40s, early 50s. So at that time, and it was written to Jews that had scattered out through the land. So at that time, they didn't have all the stuff that we've got. They didn't have Paul's letters and, you know, some of the things that we had for instruction. And these people were just kind of just running amok because they didn't have any instruction. They didn't have any control over anything. So James is saying here, when he says don't let many of you become teachers, he's talking about let's don't false teach here. And he's talking about we all stumble. Knowing that there is some false teaching going on, and we all stumble because these people especially weren't aware of everything. So this is instruction to them and us, because many of us, even though we're knowledgeable in God's word, there's still things that we don't know. And we stumble. 3-5, he says, "Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles." These are examples that James is using as the tongue and the power of the tongue. Just as we saw with the fire hose, that fire hose left unattended can cause all kinds of damage. He says we put bits and bridles in horses' mouths. And again, this came up in class, and there was some misunderstanding what actually a bridle is. And me being born and raised on a farm and a ranch, I mean, that's hard for me to understand because it's everyday life. But a lot of people are not subject to that kind of thing and don't really know. So for those of you that don't know or don't have a clear understanding, it's a leather apparatus that goes around the nose of the horse and up over the head. And there's two reins. You hold one in your left hand and one in your right hand. The bit goes in the bridle at the base where it goes into the mouth of the horse. And that's a metal bit. It's usually about that big around. So that goes in the horse. So now the reins, you can guide the horse. If you think of the bridle and the reins as your steering wheel and your brakes on your automobile, give you a better idea of the control you have. Average horse weighs about 1,000 pounds. So you can't just grab a hold of the mane up on the top of his neck and try to guide him. It doesn't work that way. So you got the reins in your hands. You want to go left, you pull the left rein, pulls the bit, pulls the horse. Same way if you're going to go to the right. If you want to stop, you pull back on the reins, pull the bit back in his mouth, and that stops the horse. If you want to go full speed, you loosen the reins up and let him run. Okay? So when James is saying that indeed we put bits in the mouths of horses that they might obey us, you got to consider that this bridle and this bit is controlling a 1,000-pound animal. That's what the tongue does with us. If we don't have control over it, that's how mighty that tongue is. And then he says, we also look at ships. Although they're large and driven by fierce winds, they're turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. I don't know how many of you have been on big ships. Some of you have been in service. Some of you have been on big ships. Some have cruised on big ships. But, for example, if you're on a 200-foot-long ship, that rudder is somewhere between 10 and 20 feet long. It's 5 to 10% of the size of the ship. So just like this little bit in this horse's mouth controls that 1,000-pound animal, you've got a short, small rudder controlling a massive ship. That's the example James is using here of how important that tongue is to us. And then, and we use this quite often because everybody can relate to this more easily, he goes to even so the tongue is a little member, it boasts great things. And then he says, see how great a forest a little fire kindles. So back to the power of things, you can take just a little bitty match out of a book of safety matches and burn the whole forest. That's how effective the tongue can be. So he's used three examples. I've thrown in the fire hose as an example because it's something else we can relate to. But that's the problem we have with the tongue. How do you bridle that? How do you take that fire and not let it kindle and burn the whole forest? James 6 and 7 reads, and the tongue is a fire. So not only has he compared it to kindling and burning a whole forest, he now says it is the fire. It's a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. That is really strong language when you start taking that apart and seeing what he's saying about the tongue. What's the importance of controlling the tongue? I think that verse says a whole lot about how important it is. The tongue is the fire. The tongue is like a fire. It defiles the whole body. If you're gossiping or you're lying or the tongue's just going nuts like the fire hose would if you let it go, what do you think is going to happen to the respect you have from other people? What do you think is going to happen to the body that you walk in as other people look at it and view what you are? It defiles the whole body. Then verse 7, he said, every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea, what does he say about them? Is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. We see dolphin shows. Trained dolphins, huge animals. The horses are trained, dogs are trained, cats are trained, lions are tamed. But he says in verse 8, no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. So you'd think if we can train horses and we can train lions and we can train elephants and all this stuff, why can't we take care of this little thing that's in our mouth? It becomes a question that's really unanswerable when you stop and think about everything that we can tame, but we can't tame the tongue. No man can tame the tongue, James tells us. It's an unruly evil. It can cause both curse and bless. We look at verses 9 and 10. It says, with it we bless our God and Father. That's true. And with it we curse men. That's true. Who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. And then he says, my brethren, these things ought not to be so. How can you have good come out of your mouth and still have bad come out of your mouth? It happens. A little story here to tell you at this point. It's a good news, bad news kind of story. Most of you probably heard this. A Greek philosopher asked his servant to provide the best dish possible. The servant prepared a dish of tongue. Now you and I are going to think, well, that's terrible. And he said, it is the best of all dishes because with it we may bless and communicate happiness, dispel sorrow, remove despair, cheer the faint-hearted, inspire the discouraged, and say 100 other things to uplift mankind. And then here's the bad news. Later, the same philosopher asked the servant to provide the worst dish he could think of. Again, a dish of tongue appeared on the table. The servant said, "It is the worst, because with it we may curse and break human hearts, destroy reputations, promote discord and strife, set families, communities, and nations at war with each other." He was a wise servant, Solomon wrote. Whoever keeps his tongue keeps his soul from trouble. There was an instance that came up about a month ago, and it was a manager cursing and swearing at one of the employees. Brought the employee to tears. Broke her. For what reason? Because she did something a little bit wrong? It was horrible to see. I didn't know what to do. You don't hardly want to get in the middle of it. But the poor thing, I don't know what she did after all this happened. But that's what a tongue can do to someone. Just totally broke her. And yet, that manager didn't think anything about it. But that's what the tongue can do. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about what James is talking about here. And then verses 11 and 12, he comes back and he says, he gives some more example here. God explains this blessing and cursing thing that he's talking about. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing, my brother. These things ought not to be so. Does a spring set forth fresh water and bitter water from the same opening? That's not possible. So why is it possible to have good things and bad things both coming out of one mouth? And then he goes into verse 12 and he says, can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives? Well, of course, the answer is no. Or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields salt water and fresh water. So how is it that we have good and bad both coming out of our mouth? He finishes this chapter up with two different types of wisdom. In verse 13, he says, but who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by his good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Not only our good conduct, but our good speech. And he says in verse 14, if you have bitter envy and you have self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. And that's what some of these people were doing. They were boasting and they were lying against God's word. And James goes on in verse 15, he said, that wisdom doesn't descend from above. That's an earthly wisdom, sensual and demonic. So we think about what wisdom is, that wisdom basically is you have knowledge of something, and if you have wisdom, you have the ability to put that knowledge to work. Okay? So if we're talking about earthly wisdom, then we've got earthly thoughts, we've got earthly knowledge, and we have the wisdom to put that to use. In verse 16, he says, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and everything evil thing are there. You'll think up and do everything that's possible. Verse 17, he sweeps it around the other way and he says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure and then peaceful and then gentle. It's willing to yield. It's full of mercy. It's full of good fruits. It's without partiality. And it's without hypocrisy. It is what it is. You can't say one thing and do another thing with wisdom from above. And he ends up this chapter in verse 18. He says, now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace. By who? Those who make peace. We learn a lot about the power of the tongue and the importance of controlling our words in this chapter. Stop and think about what you're doing in your own everyday life. Well, I should say we are doing in our own everyday life. Stop and think about before you push the button to share something. Is that going to offend someone? Is that going to hurt someone? Is that going to turn someone against you? If it is, don't share it. If you're typing in a comment to someone, maybe it's a situation where you're angry with someone. If we're doing that, just stop it. It's not going to do any good. I was in management for many years, and I can't remember ever raising my voice to anyone. I'd sit them down and I would talk with them. And if I had an issue that I thought was pretty touchy, I'd bring everybody in and have a meeting. And I would look at them and I'd say, look, here's the deal. If this shoe fits, you put it on and wear it. If it doesn't fit, just throw it away. I'm not talking to you. That way no one was ever singled out, but the one that had the problem knew. We can conquer issues in our life if we just stop and think about it. Put this mind in gear before you let the tongue waggle. It's like a standard transmission in your automobile. Push in that clutch before you throw the transmission in gear. Our words have the ability to build others up and also have the ability to tear them down. They have the ability to bring blessings and cursings. Let us remember, speak with wisdom and kindness. Use our words to spread love and encouragement. And let us strive to be mindful of the impact of our words. Let us be aware of what we're saying, especially on those around us. And then lastly, let us all seek to cultivate a spirit of gentleness and a humility in our speech, always seeking to bring glory to God through the words and actions that we do. Back to what we started with, clean your heart out, put God in it, and that's going to take a whole lot of your problems with the tongue. Just be careful. Be careful of what we say and what we do. We're in a whole different situation socially than we were even 25, 30 years ago. And definitely way different than what the people were doing when James wrote this letter. But we have to be aware of our surroundings. We have to be aware of what we're doing. James says so. With that in mind, we'll issue the invitation. If there is anyone here that has not put on their Lord in baptism, we have that available for you tonight. If you're ready to say yes to God and no to Satan, now's the time to do that. If you've got things in your life that are issues that maybe you can't get done, fixed yourself, and you need prayers of the congregation, if you'll let us know what your problems are, we'll certainly pray for you. And we know in this congregation prayers work. But we can't pray for you, and we can't pray for issues if we don't know about them. So if we've got anything going on, let it be made known as we stand and sing the invitation.